Welcome to the Station of Decapitation Without Your Head. I'm Nasty Neil, and I'm joined by Ian Hunt Duffy, director of Double Blind, coming February 13th. How are you doing?
I'm good, Neil. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, thanks for doing this. So for people not aware yet, can you give them an idea of what Double Blind is about?
Sure. So Double Blind is a self-contained horror thriller about a clinical drug trial that goes terribly wrong. So it's a story about seven young participants who sign up to test a new pharmaceutical drug at this remote facility. And soon they're faced with this terrifying side effect of the drug that if they fall asleep, they'll die. And then they're trapped in this facility. There's a lockdown. They can't escape. So they have to somehow find a way to escape and also stay awake. So that's sort of the pitch of the movie.
Yeah. Now, I saw you made this, the writer is Derek McGarrigle. I saw his last name, McGarrigle.
McGarrigle. You're close. McGarrigle.
Yeah, close. All right. Yeah. And then I saw that you worked with him a lot. So, so how did that come about? How did your partnership come about?
So myself and Derek, we actually went to film school together so we're both from Ireland, and there's a film school in Dublin, and that's where we got to know each other. And when we came out of film school, we did a short film together called Gridlock, which was sort of like a Twilight Zone episode. It was like, it's set during a traffic jam on a country road, and a little girl goes missing from one of the cars, and then all the other drivers become suspects. And so that was our first short, like, that Derek wrote and I directed, and that did really well for us. That, like, you know, it won a lot of awards, and it played at like loads of festivals around the world, so we got to travel around with the film. And that was really encouraging for us. It's like, oh, there is like an appetite still for genre films and the kind of thrillers and genre films that we wanted to make. Like Gridlock was sort of, or, you know, a statement of intent, like, this is the kind of stuff that we want to make, and the kind of sandbox we want to play it. So then after that, we did another short film called Low Tide, which was more of a horror. It was like a kind of coming of age horror story. And it was like a step up in budget and scale. We did that with Screen Ireland, who are the main kind of funding body in Ireland for making films. And then on the back of that, we got development money to write Double Blind, the script for Double Blind. So this is our first feature together, but we've been doing the short films up until now.
Yeah. Did both the previous short films play the same kind of festivals?
I suppose Low Tide was probably more the horror, more genre specific ones in America and Europe. Gridlock kind of skewed both ways. Which was surprising. I thought it wasn't really when we made it, it wasn't made as like a festival film as such. Yeah. It was just a kind of short film that we would have enjoyed or would have liked to have seen if we were watching a bunch of shorts at a film festival. So we were pleasantly surprised that it did not only play at the kind of more genre or horror festivals or thriller kind of centric film festivals, but also at some of the, you know, the more typical, reputable festivals, let's say.
Right. Had you both, I've been going to festivals before you had your own shorts?
Yeah. So we would have been going to, like, when we were in film school, we'd go, there's a couple of film festivals in Ireland that are kind of very industry orientated, like that the Galway Film Flat, for example, every summer is the one that most industry people would attend. So we'd always make sure we go down to that and try and see what films are being shown, or what, you know, try and network or meet filmmakers, that kind of thing. And there's a Dublin Film Fest, there's a Cork Film Fest. So there was a good few in Ireland that we would attend regularly. And then, as I said, we made Gridlock somewhat in a response to, we weren't seeing the kind of short that we were excited by, like the kind of films that are the stories that, let's say, got us into filmmaking in the first place. Both myself and Derek, we have similar sensibilities. We're very big genre fans. And
yeah. What do you mean by that? By, shorts that you didn't really see?
Well, in Ireland anyway, at the time, and this isn't like, I don't want this to be like a broad, sure, like condemnation of short time, but there was a lot of like very weighty or, you know, issue movies and short films. And sometimes I don't know if they lend themselves best to the short form. You know, you've got this like very serious topic, let's say, if it's about suicide or depression, and there was just, you know, if you're seeing a few of these back to back in a program, typically you only see short films in like a block of, yeah, you know, maybe 10 or 12 shorts. So I don't know, we just wanted to when I remember just one time saying to Derek, like, I'd love to see something that would give better entertainment in the middle of this block, you know, like a thriller or a mystery or a horror, something, you know. So when we got a chance to make Gridlock, that was kind of, we were thinking of ourselves first as the audience, really, I suppose, you know. Yeah.
So I didn't, you know, realize that there's a lot of festivals in Ireland. What's the film community itself like?
Yeah, it's great. I mean, it's a small community. We're a small country. So it's a very, like, it's a very busy industry. There's a lot of productions happening here. A lot of international productions come over to Ireland for the tax breaks. Like, so there's a lot of, like, American or UK or European, like, TV and film is filmed in Ireland. So, like, yeah, it's a very busy industry. But I guess because it's a small country, you know, everyone sort of knows everyone, you know. That's good. Like, you know, you make connections and you'd know lots of people who are working on different productions.
When you and Derek make a movie together, do you both come up with the idea? Is he strictly, you know, come up with the idea and write it and you direct it? Like, how's that work?
Gridlock was my idea, and then I went, like, the pitch of it, I went to Derek and, like, could he develop this into a script? And then Low Tide was, I think, his idea. But, like, we would always, Derek would have the idea and we would kind of bounce it back and forth, I suppose, between us, and then he would go off and write it. I know Double Blind, for our first feature film, we knew we wouldn't have a huge budget, so we were pragmatic in our approach. Like, okay, let's come up with a concept that can we come up with a story that would work in a confined location, like a one location horror thriller, because that's going to be advantageous from a budget and a logistical point of view, because you don't have to move to multiple locations. But then we can use that to our advantages as well from a storytelling point of view. You know, can create this, like, pressure cooker environment, this atmosphere. So we kind of use that as our, okay, if that's our parameters, what kind of story could we tell in one location? And then we're both big fans of I'm a sucker for a high concept. Especially in horror where there's, I love horrors where there's a rule you can't break, like Tremors, don't touch the ground, Ring, don't watch the videotape, you know, those kind of hooks, like quick hooks for an audience. So Derek came, he had that hook of don't fall asleep. And I just thought that was great. Like, okay, so what can we build out from there? So that was a jumping off point. We had that hook, and then we wanted to do something in one location. So we came up with the idea of a drug trial for a pharmaceutical company. Okay, that could all be within one location. And that was sort of the impetus of the story.
When you said use it to your advantage, you guys definitely do, because so you have a, you know, group of people, and they don't know each other beforehand, so you kind of slowly build the friendships between them. Yeah. And then when the paranoia sets in, you start to splinter them apart, and I think that really works, because you know, you actually care about the people, you know, once things start to happen.
Oh, that's great. I'm glad to hear you say that. Yeah. You need to know each individual character. That was the aim anyway. You have to, if we can get to know the characters somewhat before we start killing them off, so that, yeah, the audience will actually care who survives or who dies, that kind of thing.
Yeah. How about finding the location?
Yeah. So, I mean, it was a very specific location requirement. I thought we were being real smart. Oh, set all in one location. That'll make our lives easier. But then we couldn't find the location for a long time. I mean, typically, if this was like a studio movie or we had a bigger budget, it would be a set build. You would build this on a lot, like, you know, and then you'd have total control to design it. But we just didn't have that kind of budget. So we knew we'd have to find somewhere that actually already existed that we could then work within and augment and set design within it. So we're based in Dublin. We tried to find it in Dublin. We looked for months and months. We couldn't find it. We actually ended up down in Limerick, which is kind of further south in Ireland. We just put out a kind of a brief to all the different counties in Ireland saying, look, this is what we're looking for. If you have anything like this, we'll bring our show, we'll bring our production down to your town, you know. And Limerick, the film in Limerick office, they showed us a bunch of places, and they had this building. It was kind of like an industrial building, and it was built to start bringing in businesses and different, you know, different businesses were going to be residents there. But because of COVID, it hadn't filled up yet. So it was just like this empty space. It was practically a studio in a way, sitting there unoccupied. Mm-hmm. There's only a few people that started coming in business wise. So when we saw it, I was like, this is the place. We have to take the production down to Limerick. And I mean, all the corridors were there. We could then, like, you know, paint and dress them. There was like the big room that we used as a common room. And then some of the smaller rooms, you were able to do like little set builds, like the dorm room, the MRI room, that kind of thing. And then for some of the locations, like the lab or the exam room, there was a university in Limerick then that let us in to film in their actual labs or their actual, there's a physiotherapy room they had. So that helped us massively then as well from a budget and a production. Like that gave us a lot of added value, you know? So
mm-hmm. did the actual building you found change the script at all? Like, was there any like, oh, we don't have a room that fits this, or we'll rewrite something a little bit to fit like the rooms we have?
There's a bit of that. Yeah. I mean, I that's always kind of the way though. Like you have a vision of something in your head when you read the script, and then you know, even on a very basic level, you walk in and go, oh, there's no door there. Okay. So we can't come in that door or whatever. You just have to work around it. But no, this was, what was great about this was just the kind of, it was empty and it was a blank canvas in a way that we could then, they didn't mind if we like painted like the stripes in the corridors or the mural, like the forest mural. And we were able to really have kind of free reign. So our Steve Kingston and our art department, it was very liberating, I suppose, for them. Like we did, you know, they didn't have a massive budget, but they had sort of control. They could really go to town on it.
Yeah. Besides the length, obviously, how different was it making a feature film as opposed to making short films?
It wasn't a whole, I mean, it wasn't crazy different, but I suppose, yeah, that is, I mean, the length of that is the obvious thing. Like, I mean, Gridlock and Low Tide would have been like 4 or 5 day shoots, you know? So now this was only a 23 day shoot. So it was, you know, it was pretty short. It was a very tight schedule, but that was still, even at 23 days, that was still the longest I'd ever filmed consecutively for. So yeah, it was more of a stamina challenge and an energy. You have to keep that energy up throughout it. And as a director, your energy is infectious. If you come in down or low, that's going to change the mood of the room and the cast and crew. So yeah, it was just kind of keeping that energy and that focus, I suppose, for the whole length. But I guess the biggest thing was just constantly rewriting the script. Because the schedule was so tight, we were always chasing our days somewhat. So you know, I'd be constantly on the phone to Derek in the evening, our editor, Colin, just talking about, okay, the scenes tomorrow, is there, you know, what can we cut or lose or change without, like, you know, really affecting the story? Or this scene that's coming up, can we do that in a simpler way? Or so that was like, that's something you don't really have to deal with in the short, you know. I found that was, you were just constantly tweaking things or changing things just to keep the show on the road.
Yeah. Now, besides you and Derek, did you work with any like of the same, you know, people, not necessarily cast, the crew, I guess, from your short films to the feature film?
Yeah. So firstly, it's the same producer. So Simon Doyle is producing. He produced all my shorts and this feature. And then Narian Van Malley is the cinematographer. He shot all my shorts as well. And again, we went to film school together, all of us. So that's probably the best thing I got out of film school, I would say, is just these friendships and these collaborations. So it was important to try and, for me anyway, if we could come up together and do the feature together, that was the aim anyway.
Yeah. That's interesting. You said the best thing you get from film school. Cause I know a lot of independent filmmakers as friends and also from doing the show, and the majority either didn't go to film school, or the ones that did say it's not necessarily was helpful. So what were the benefits of going to film school?
Yeah. So, I mean, as I already said, the main thing was just the collaborations and getting to know those people, because I still work with that crew. I still have like a real relationship and a bond with them, and a good shorthand, I suppose, from film school, from working on each other's shorts in film school and then right away up now. Film school for me anyway, they kind of left you to your own devices. It's somewhat like, it was more like you got out of it whatever you put into it. So you could just lay back and do nothing, or it was kind of, the impetus was on you to rent out the camera and go shoot something at the weekend or experiment or, you know, that kind of thing. So I guess that's useful, because it's, you have to have, it creates like a self-motivation and a self-interest. But yeah, I don't know if films, look, I went to film school, but I'm not like some advocate, like you have to go to film school. I know it's a lot different over there in America. Like it's hugely expensive. And
Yeah. I was thinking that actually after I asked that, it probably is a much different setup because it costs probably tens of thousands here a year to go.
Yeah. And that's, so I'd never encourage anyone to go into like huge debt to go to film school. Cause you could, yeah. Like things like back when I was in film school, like, I mean, it wasn't that long ago, but cameras weren't like, you know, even cell phone cameras weren't as good as they are now. You know what I mean? So you did have to somewhat rent a camera or have a camera to make a film. Like, you know, you couldn't just do everything yourself. So,
yeah. And I saw that you and Simon started Failsafe Films. Is Derek also involved in that?
No, it's just, I mean, we work with Derek all the time, but no, myself and Simon set up the company together. Yeah. So again, that was coming out of film school. We'd worked together and then we decided to set up the production company together and do things under that banner.
Besides the idea of like, well, let's make a film that's in one location, is Double Blind inspired by anything? That, you know, did you or Derek go and try out drugs at any point in time?
Well, we didn't do any drug trials, although we did, like, I know Derek did reach out to a number of people who had done kind of lab rat guinea pig stuff and got some insight there, and we've since had a bunch, like, we were lucky enough to play at a bunch of festivals with this, and invariably at each screening there'd be one person we would say,
interesting.
I signed up to a trial and you had this right, or you had that, or that was different, or, you know, so it was interesting to see that, like, okay, it's good to hear the things we got right, I suppose, you know, that, like, even though it's a very...
Yeah, of course. Yeah, hopefully no one's like, that's exactly my experience.
Yeah,
right there.
I survived this terrible trial. No, so I haven't done it. I haven't done a drug trial. And I know, like, I used to love the story of Robert Rodriguez, you know, selling his blood and that kind of stuff. To do El Mariachi, but no, I haven't done that. But no, I mean, in terms of like other experiences come into it, no. I mean, we've all have experience of sleep deprivation, I suppose, at various points in our life. I don't know if you have children, do you, by any chance?
No.
So, well, like, I had my son, like, our first child during pre-production of this, so I had a lot of the first couple of months he didn't sleep very well, so I had like lots of research into sleep deprivation and the effects on the mind and the body. And so I was able to share some of that with the cast, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah.
How about casting the movie? Cause you have, you know, people know Pollyanna, the McIntosh from, it's a woman, which is a great movie, by the way. I know people will probably know her from The Walking Dead, but people should check out Woman, I think.
Oh yeah. Definitely check out The Woman. Exam was another UK. I don't know if you saw that. That's like that is like a one location kind of thriller as well. That was a touching point for us. What else? Is she? I mean, she's like, there's an Irish horror film called Let Us Pray as well. It's kind of an Assault on Precinct 13 kind of vibe. It's set in a police station. And then obviously, as you said, Walking Dead. She's in Vikings Valhalla. So she's a bit of a horror icon, I suppose.
Yeah. So, you know, how did she get involved in the movie? Did you have her in mind for the doctor?
So for the doctor, we wanted someone kind of genre, like, you know, that fans kind of would recognize. So we had a great casting director on board, Amy Rowan, who would have been making suggestions of different people for each role. And yeah, she suggested Pollyanna. And actually, Dr. Burke originally in the script was a male doctor. So that was a great suggestion by Amy. It's like, well, what if we flipped the gender and then we got Pollyanna? And so we reached out to Pollyanna, he sent her script, and we kind of just crossed her fingers then. Pollyanna actually knew Mo Dunford, who was the actor in Gridlock, my short film. So she reached out to him for a bit of a background check. Check I'm not some maniac or crazy guy. So luckily Mo spoke highly of me and our experience together. So she was like, okay, I'll give it a shot. So Pollyanna came on and she was great. And yeah, she really, like, for my first feature, to have someone with that kind of experience was brilliant, because I don't know, she put everyone at ease, really. She was like, you know, she's so experienced. Like, this wasn't, I mean, I was feeling the pressure of everything, but she was very relaxed, and that was a good presence to have on set. And for the other cast, because they were like a lot of younger actors, up and coming, so it was great to see, like, you know, her coming in so prepared but easygoing and relaxed. I think that was it kind of set the mood. It was great.
Yeah. Well, everyone's great in the movie, but Pollyanna's great in the movie. And I don't want to like spoil anything, but when like more horror stuff comes up, she's also very creepy in the movie.
Yeah. Yeah, that was the kind of that scene in particular. I know you're talking about. Yeah, that was something she was really excited to dig into, like the where she comes back in later. Yeah. So.
Yeah. So Millie Brady is the lead. Was did you any of you guys know her before?
I'd seen her in there's a Netflix show, The Last Kingdom. But yeah, no, she was suggested again. Amy, our casting director, we were so casting it. It's an ensemble film, like the, you know, there's like seven main characters, excluding Pollyanna, like the seven test subjects. So we spent months and months trying to build out this group of characters and try our best to have them all have some sort of, you know, individualism or like a personality, like so that they, you know, you put a group of them together, you know each of the different characters, they don't just blend together. But we focused getting Claire first, that was, and then work out the rest of the cast from her. So yeah, it was a long journey. We looked at, there was lots of different like options, and you know, but when we saw Millie and her, like, you know, her body of work and stuff, and we had a good conversation with her, I just knew she was really excited about it, and she just really connected with it, and I had a great conversation with you, so I was really excited to get her. I think she's really good in the film.
She's great. And you talk about ensemble cast, I saw you guys won best ensemble at a festival, which I thought that was really that must have been cool, and it's it was good, because like you said, it's a, you know, there's some other characters, but it's primarily those seven and the doctor.
And that's it. It goes back to what you said earlier, like we just wanted to have, whether you like the characters or not, at least like you know them or know what.
Because not all of them are likable necessarily.
No, that's the thing. Yeah, but like hopefully then that even at that though, you remember them, or you kind of are rooting for different characters to survive or over other ones, that kind of thing. You know, you're not passive about them. You know what I mean? If we can engage you in some way, but like,
yeah. So did, when you guys started putting the movie out for festivals, so what festivals did you play?
So we premiered at Neuchâtel, like at NIFF, which is a big genre one in Europe, in Switzerland. And then we played our Irish premiere was at the Galway Film Festival, the Galway Film Fla. And then we were in Newport Beach in LA. We played a number of genre ones, like in Europe. There's like the Strasbourg Fantastic Film Festival. There's one in Malaga. It's like a fanzine genre festival. We played in Leeds in the UK. We played like pretty much all the Irish ones, like there's like Belfast, Kerry. We did the Horrorthon in Dublin at Halloween, which was really cool. Where else? Yeah, just kind of those genre ones, I suppose, more. So
did you guys get to travel to a lot of those?
Yeah, I tried to go to as many as I could. Yeah. So, and it was great just having that opportunity to that was something I suppose I didn't like as a feature. With shorts, they might bring you over, but like with features, they're, I don't know, they tend to fly you over a bit more, I suppose, or you know, travel you over and put you up. Like, so that was a cool experience. So
yeah. So when I asked about, you know, the benefits of film school, what are the benefits of traveling around to the festivals with your film?
I think so. Anytime when we went with Double Blind, there would be like a Q&A session after, like I might get the intro to film and then there's like a Q&A session afterwards, which I really enjoyed. And it's just, yeah, I mean, it's great to get a sort of a response, an immediate reaction, I guess, from the crowd and get a sense of what they liked, what they didn't like, and, you know, and answering the questions. And then, yeah, like any kind of networking, you might like, you'll always bump into other filmmakers or, you know, could be actors or producers, that kind of thing. So you never know what's going to come out of it. And I always recommend that to like people who are getting into film. Like, you do, like, it's a necessary evil. Like, even if you don't like networking, you kind of have to get good at it, or at least get comfortable with it. Like, you know, going up, like, that's how a lot of my opportunities have come out. It's just like you approach someone and say, hey, I'm this, can I talk to you about that? And, you know, you just have to. So I think that the festivals, like, people are more open to that, like you can just approach them and talk about it.
Yeah, I recommend it too to everyone from any level. If you just want to go watch movies, it's fun. You know, you'll get to see stuff that you know, maybe next year will pop up on Shudder or wherever. Yeah. Or sometimes you find hidden gems that you never see again, which is both cool, but it's also sometimes like bittersweet. Like, oh, that movie was great, but I wonder why it never, you know, went anywhere. That's a little more rare nowadays because there's a lot of platforms. So usually, you know, stuff does pop up somewhere else.
Yeah, but you're right. Like, yeah, you might see some exactly a gem that, yeah, you can tell people, like, oh, keep an eye out for this one. That, or, you know, that's keep it on your radar.
Yeah. And so when you start watching the movie with other audiences, so I assume you think, like, we'll probably play some in Ireland since we're, you know, the Irish movie. But when you start playing, like, other countries in the U.S., when you first go in, do you think, well, I hope they, like, get the movie because, you know, it's another country or, so, you know, what is that experience?
Yeah, there is a bit of that. Like, you I mean, so the cast are like a mix between English and Irish actors, and there are a lot of, there's an Irish sense of humor. Like, we have, in Ireland, we have a very kind of black, dark sense of humor. So the humor in it is in this sort of like dire circumstances are taking, making light of that. So you're curious to see how that humor is going to translate, I suppose. And so it's real rewarding then when you hear like an American audience or a Spanish audience or like laughing at these jokes, you know, you're like, okay, that's universal. It's not just an Irish thing. And yeah, I guess you just want to see what they respond to, like Big Pharma, it's international, but I guess there's in America in particular, it's like, it's
right. I was thinking about that. There's a lot of, I would think it would play well for an American audience because there's a lot of things that people could relate to in the movie. And does that come into mind at all when you're making the movie? Let's make something that can play to a wider audience.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. I mean, sometimes people think like saying, I want to make something commercial. Like that's like a dirty word or something. Right. I think, no, that's all. I want to make something that's going to be seen by the widest audience possible, you know? So, and sometimes like people have seen this and go, oh, it doesn't feel like an Irish film. And I don't take that as any sort of a
insult. There's leprechauns or anything.
Yeah, but I'm like, that's great. If it means it feels more international or more global, yeah, great. Like, yeah.
So. Yeah. And oh, by the way, and when I said like you thought maybe it would play Irish film festivals, I didn't want to mean like just because it's an Irish movie, it's going to play anywhere or anything, you know.
No, I didn't know. I didn't take it that way. No.
But also when you're playing, particularly in my mind, when you're playing American audiences, does anyone like question the politics of the movie?
I think a couple of times maybe people would ask like, oh, is this an anti-vax movie? Which it isn't. I would say, but that does seem to be like, that's actually one of the things, like this film was in development before COVID. So we were actually,
oh, that's interesting. Actually.
Yeah. We started writing this in 2018 and we were going to go into production in 2020. That was the plan. And then COVID happened and everything shut down. And then it was delayed then a further 2 years. It was like 2022 before we could actually film. But in those 2 years with COVID and everything, it had taken on this whole new resonance, you know, even the term lockdown in the script, that was always there, but now that has a whole other meaning. And then people have become much more aware of vaccines and drug trials and pharma and stuff. So that, you know, I don't mind it. Like the film is kind of a life of its own, I suppose, but it does take on this new COVID messaging or politics, as you say, and it's not necessarily what was intended. Right. But
that's interesting because it's both like in a way of, I don't want to say fortunate because obviously there's nothing fortunate coming out of the pandemic, but it is because it's going to be, people are going to like, oh, this is interesting. I would assume this is, you know, a pandemic movie. And then sometimes people will bring their own viewpoint to any work of art and see things that maybe were not intended whatsoever.
Oh no. Yeah. And look, that's it. Like, I mean, once you make a film or any piece of art, once you put it out there, it's no longer yours, you know? It's open to interpretation and it's whatever the audience responds to, they take it. Like, I'll just have to I wouldn't discourage any theories or, you know, ideas about the film. If that's what it, you know, if that's the feeling it gave you or that's how you responded to it, that's your own experience, you know? But yeah, I mean, it is, I guess, I wouldn't say a victim of timing no, it's not a victim. That's not the right word. But yeah, it could be lucky, I suppose, that it came out.
Yeah, unfortunate accident or something. Yeah. But yeah.
Happy accident.
So you said about, you know, before pre-COVID, you start, you know, pre-production. So how much did that delay, you know, making Double Blind?
How much of COVID delay? Probably 2 years, I would say. Definitely a year and a half. Yeah, because 2020, nothing. Like, that was a year gone. You know, you might as well, rip up that year in the calendar. 21, we were hoping to go at the end of 2021. But then just it was the location. We hadn't secured that, and we were still casting. So that's why it rolled over to the start of 22. So, yeah, probably about a year and a year and a half, I'd say, we lost, really, to COVID.
So I don't like to make the interview about myself, but this is something I can relate to. So 2019, I made my first feature with my friends Michael and Sophia. And then 2020, in February, we filmed some more of it. And then literally, like, next week, everything was shut down. So it was a long delay. And then we just had we finally had a festival run and finished a movie and everything. But during that period, did you ever think, like, we're not going to finish this movie? Or were you like, oh, I think, you know, we'll just got to wait this out?
No, you just have to wait it out. Like, I mean, so we kind of got the green light from, like, so you go in Ireland, I don't know what it's like in the States. I mean, there's different funding models. But here with Screen Ireland, you go through a couple of rounds of development of the script. They fund each round of of this script. And then when it's at a position or a place that they're happy with, then you can apply for production funding. So we did that at the end of 2020, like December time, and then we got the kind of nod early 2021, okay, you've got this. So we knew once we kind of got, like, you know, the promise from them that they would fund it, we knew, okay, this is a reality, it's just, when is it going to happen, you know? So we just used the time as much as we could for preparation, you know, whether it was rewriting the script or that kind of thing, or looking for locations, or myself doing my own prep work, visual prep, that kind of thing, you know. So no, I don't know, I'm probably stubborn. I was like, yeah, this is happening, whether we
your first feature. And but congratulations, by the way, making your first,
I mean, and you too. I did, yeah, congratulations to you. So you. I mean, how did you find, you asked me, I was asking you, how did you find the transition? Had you done short films prior to the feature?
Well, it's weird because so I did festivals as press, and then I would, not intentionally, I would hang out and, you know, meet filmmakers in a filmmaker time, and people liked me, and so we made a short film, and then from there, we made a feature, well, actually two feature films. They play together. It's very hard to explain. But from a short film to a feature film was a big leap. Mm. But they're similar because they're both mockumentaries. They're, you know, fake documentaries. But yeah, that's why I recommend, even if you don't want to make films, but you're going to meet people who love films either way, you know, at a film festival. So you can either just talk about movies, or maybe you'll get involved. And if you are a filmmaker, you meet other people that, you like their stuff, and maybe you'd want to work with them down the road.
That's it. You don't know where these, like, connections will lead. Like, you know, it could be years down the line, you might bump into that person, or they might get in touch, and there's, like, a project you work on together. Like, you know, it's always, you kind of have to find your community, I think, so.
Yeah, and we just finished our festival run. So then in my mind's like, oh, I have to make something else now so I can keep going to the festival.
Yeah, that's always it. What's next? Yeah.
So when you're filming, like, the hallucinations in the movie, so, you know, obviously you script that out, but from script to, like, how are we going to film them? Like, how did you go about that? Like, how are we going to show these?
Yeah, I suppose the intention was that if each hallucination was somehow different or unique to that character, if we could, from a story point of view, if they could represent something about that character, whether, like, we see a certain fear of theirs manifested before they die, like, each of their deaths is somehow tied to their underlying fears, so that was the kind of this script thing to differentiate them. But then visually, yeah, we just try it, myself and the cinematographer, we talk about, okay, what can we do different in this? I would storyboard. I'm not a good artist at all, but I'd be very crude drawings, but, like, I would storyboard as much as I could these kind of sequences. I'd pull as much visual references as possible and just try and do a lookbook. And then, yeah, just with the cinematographer and other departments, we kind of see what we can see what we can, how we can pull it off, really, you know?
Yeah, and no, they look really
cool. That's your question, did I? I'm sorry.
No, just, you know, like, you know, because you say, oh, I just think in the script, how much was it scripted? Obviously, it's scripted, but like, how much was it planned out in the script, like how they would look, the hallucinations?
So can we go into spoiler territory in this or not?
Yeah, it's fine by me. It's up to you, though. Yeah.
Well, I'll try. But like, so there's one death that's, it's to do a lot of, it's to do with sound or the,
yeah, which is stuff. Right, which is, that one's really interesting. I thought it was just like someone's going deaf, but it's interesting that it's like a distortion, you know, like hearing something later.
Yeah. So that was definitely in the script, and that was one of the, like, some of the deaths went through different iterations as the drafts went on, but that was always the one that stayed the same, because I don't know, I just, and it was on, that was on the page, like Derek had that idea, and it read like a Stephen King chapter or something. It was, yeah, just really definitely haunting. And yeah, when I read, I was like, oh, that was great. Like, so yeah, I, that, all the props to him, like that was on the page. So it was, that was more like, okay, how can I, you know, achieve that? Like, you know, visually and sonically. Then other deaths were, I'm trying to think of ones I can, without spoiling. Yeah. I mean, I don't know. I would have a plan, and then, you know, it would be, what could we do with this? Like the cinematographer, like he brought in the zoom lens. So a lot of this stuff where we're like, there's a lot of zooming in on Millie's character when she's zoning out, like using the long lens for that. What other ones? I'm trying not to spoil it, just, but I don't
know. But well, as you said, you know, the tagline, you know, don't fall asleep and everything. So, you know, how to show that, you know, when they're dying, they're actually falling asleep, is as opposed to just like they just fall asleep and that's the end of it.
Oh yeah, that was it. Like, that was kind of, yeah, we would, myself and Narian, the cinematographer, we did up like a kind of, you know, a brainstorm or board, like a list of like, okay, what are like some visual devices or tricks, we like sleep tricks is kind of what we were talking, like, so we would watch a load of films or different things and like anything that had any sort of sleep thing, and like, what do we like, what don't we like, and tried to come up with as practical in camera as possible. So even like when Millie's character first starts drifting the corridor, like it's kind of blurry, that was like the old Vaseline on the lens trick, you know, on the filter. So just think like, yeah, if there's any practical things like that, or just the orientation of the camera, like shift in perspective. We try, yeah, there is some VFX in the film, but like as much as possible, we try to do things practically or in camera where we could.
Yeah, and for, you know, horror people out there, the deaths are very bloody and horrific.
Cool, I'm glad to hear it, yeah. Because we're straddling a little bit of the thriller. Is it a thriller, is it horror?
Right,
thriller,
right.
Horror. So I'm glad to hear that some of the, yeah, we have some horror credentials.
Right, yeah. For like, I know that's always like an argument if a movie's a... people argue over genre, you know, of a movie, yeah. And to me, really, if it's a good movie or not, is the, you know...
Yeah, same, yeah.
Do I like it less if it's a horror or a thriller or a sci-fi or whatever? But, yeah, you know, if I like it, I like it. But who is... did you work with the person before who did, like, the effects for the gore?
So, like, the SFX, like the kind of practical blood effects, that was like the art departments, like, so Steve Kingston and his team, and then our makeup artist Madonna, she's done like a lot of horror films, so she was great at like all the kind of blood work and that kind of more visceral stuff. And even just, I don't know if it gets enough but like the exhaustion, a lot of that is look, the performance is for sure, but the makeup, yeah, was a lot there, like, to really, they looked wrecked, like exhausted, yeah, you know, and that the makeup and hair.
Yeah, really, something else I noticed in this is a weird thing to notice, but you know, when they sweat, they actually look like they're sweating, you know, they're wet, yeah, and, you know, and that, I mean, it comes through in the movie. That's a weird thing to pick up, but yeah, I thought,
no,
you
know, yeah, you're absolutely right. Yeah, the sweat, like, and that's like, I don't know, it's like glycerine or something, or but like, yeah, it looks great. Like they do, they look sweaty and dirty and tired, and yeah, all that.
And that adds to the feel that, you know, they're all in here in this one place together. You know, it's not, you know, they really can't get out. They're stuck together. Then, the feel of paranoia really amps up, and like you said, the one setting really helps that.
Yeah, no, for sure. Like, and that was, even though it's like a large space and like the common room, right, we were trying to make it feel claustrophobic as much as possible. And yeah, I just I love those kind of films where it's a group of mismatched characters are trapped together and slowly turn on each other, paranoia. Those are always great, I think.
Yeah, like The Thing, or, you know.
John, oh man, The Thing. Yeah, The Thing is like one of my all time favorites, and it was. I'm sure you've noticed it's a heavy influence on this film, like so.
Yeah, yeah.
Even from the score all the way down, you know. So.
Yeah, well, I think when you think of a film that really, you know, for paranoia, it's definitely The Thing. It's weird because The Thing is a movie I loved as a kid because of the weird monsters, and then as an adult, you like it for other reasons. And I still like the monsters in it, but yeah. It's almost like a perfect horror movie, I think.
Yeah, I think, yeah, absolutely. Like, it's if it's not like top three, I don't know. I just, the thing, I watch it like every year. It's just like I love it.
I would, that's a weird thing, but I would also suggest if you ever play The Thing board game, it is so fun because really builds the paranoia because you don't know what character, because it's a group of people and you play all the different people. And some you may turn into The Thing throughout the game, and if you do, you try to sabotage everyone else. And so it actually kind of are lying if you are, or you try to convince people you aren't. And
this is—I'm a huge fan. I can't believe I never heard of this. This is amazing. This is like my birthday is coming up this month. I'm gonna get someone to get me.
I love it, and I still the first time we played it, we voted to burn one of our friends alive in the game, not in reality. We were convinced she was The Thing, so we burned her with the flamethrower, and then she wasn't. And like I really felt guilty, even though it's a game. I was like, oh my god, we burned this person alive, and. They weren't The Thing anyway. And then that's we great. All died.
Like, yeah, you always like The Thing, right? Those movies. You always quite like, what would I do in that circumstance? So I guess you get to kind of live that out a bit. Like, you know, would I point the finger at the wrong person? Or, yeah, it sounds like you did. So
yeah, yeah. And then the last, because I bring it around when I go to festivals, and then a group of us will play like in the hotel room or whatever. And the last time, like people thought I was The Thing, and I get kind of mad. I'm like, because you're trying to convince people you aren't. But anyway.
Oh, no, this is amazing. Thank you so much. I can't wait to find this. I hope I can still out there. Yeah.
So how about directing action scenes? Is that something you've done before? Because I've not seen your short films, which I'd like to see.
Just a little bit of action in Gridlock. I mean, there's like a couple of fights and that kind of thing. But no, I love action films. I haven't had this was sort of the most action I've done, really. But I'd like to do more of it. It was my first time working with like a proper stunts team. Lau was our stunt supervisor, and he had a whole team, like, so like choreographing, sorry, any kind of fight work or stunts, or like, even that was my first time doing wire work as well, like for the levitation. So yeah, it was cool. I'd love to do more action. I'm gonna do the first Irish proper action film. That's my goal.
I like it. Yeah. By the way, where can people see your shorts? Are they available anywhere?
Low Tide, I don't think, is, but Gridlock is on YouTube. Yeah, so if you search for Gridlock short film or my name, you know, Duffy, you'll probably get it. It's on like Omeletto, you know that short? It's on like
a
short platform on YouTube. Yeah, so you can check it out there.
That's interesting too, because not that long ago when my friends I'd see a short film at a festival. And that would be like your only chance to see it, like, because there wasn't really anywhere to put it besides if someone just would upload it themselves to their YouTube.
Yeah.
And but there are like starting to be more platforms that or on YouTube and even like Shutter and different things, you know, carry some shorts.
Yeah, I know. And it's like when we first did Gridlock, we had a distributor come aboard the film for shorts like in Ireland, and they would then. You know, they'd sell it to different territories. You make a little bit of money, like, because like with short films, you know, you don't make money off it typically, right? Anyway, so this was like an opportunity to make some money. Oh, you might sell it to different, or you sell it to airlines and different things like that, like places where you can play a short. But then if you want to get in on that, you have to kind of give them exclusivity. You can't put it up online, and that might be for like 2 years or something. So then, you know, I don't know if I'd do that again. If I was doing a short, I don't know if I'd recommend that to filmmakers. I think it's better to just get it out there, like, because the response, even when Gridlock went up and you you know, lots of positive response of people. Like, I've gotten contacted about different things because they've seen it on YouTube. They discovered it, and it wouldn't have happened that, you know.
Yeah, because it is different than, obviously, you want people to see your feature, but a lot more money goes into a feature, so you want to make, you know, money back for that, obviously. But what are, like, the goals when you make a short? Because, like, what you're saying is kind of like, this is what I can do, you know, almost to show people what you can do in hopes to make, you know, a feature.
That's what, yeah, no, that, well, for me anyway, and people can take what, this is just my own experience. Like, shorts were just a stepping stone to a feature. Like, I always wanted to make features, you know, and shorts in this country anyway are kind of how you prove, like, learn your craft, hone your craft, but also, like, you know, prove that you can, you know, make a film or, like, be trusted with money to make a film. You have to make a couple of shorts before they let you make a feature. So I, with that in mind, I knew the kind of feature that the space I want, I knew would be a horror thriller genre. So those were the kind of shorts that I would make. Then I was specifically targeted. Okay, let's make stuff that's in that space so that when we get that opportunity to pitch our feature film, that, because invariably when you pitch to an investor or a producer, they'll say, okay, what have you done short film wise or what have you done previously? And if I'm pitching a horror and all I've done is, I don't know, comedy or, you know, something drama, they might go, I don't know. But like, if I go, well, here's some short films that are hard or thriller, like, it's an easier sell, you know? So that's what I would do with shorts personally, is use them as a calling card. Yeah. But also as a, work within, pick the genre you want for your feature, first feature film, and then use your shorts to work towards that. Like, I think.
What were some of the movies like that you watch and made you want to go to film school and become a filmmaker?
I mean, my all-time favorite film is Terminator 2. I think that's like a perfect movie. So yeah, just go, like, I mean, I grew up on like James Cameron, John McTiernan films. Predator, Die Hard, like 80s kind of action horror thriller, like, and then The Thing, John Carpenter movies. Those are the kind of films that got me excited about filmmaking, or that, oh, I'd love to do that.
And Predator's another one that people will really argue about the genre of that film. I actually had someone block me on social media because I consider it a horror movie, and they're like, it's a sci-fi action movie. It's like, that's totally fine, but I also, you know, it's just a weird topic for me when people start arguing, like getting actually mad about like what genre a movie fits in.
Yeah, well, I don't know. I remember I saw Predator when I was probably far too young and being terrified by it. So yeah, there are definitely some horror, like some really scary bits in it. Yeah, but no, yeah, I mean, it's also like the most ridiculous 80s action stuff as well. So yeah, action horror, I guess.
Yeah. Yeah, and that's what I like about it. It fits in multiple genres, and that's also what I like about festivals, is a lot of the movies don't necessarily, they'll either fit in multiple genres, or maybe they don't fit in any genre, you know?
Yeah.
You'll see stuff that, and I think that's becoming more mainstream or whatever, where a movie isn't necessarily like, this is a straight horror movie, this is a straight, you know, whatever movie.
Mm, yeah, and like, even films that can like switch genre as well. That's becoming more, like, you've seen Barbarian, I suppose. Have you?
Yeah.
Yeah. Like, that was, I would love to have seen the pitch for Barbarian, because the fact that got made, I think, is fantastic. I love Barbarian, by the way, but understand the script. You might go, how is this going to work? Like, you know?
Right. And I went in, which I was glad that the trailer really didn't show anything.
It was very clever actually. Yeah.
So the first like 40 minutes of the movie, I think it's a completely different kind of movie. And then I even thought it was the end of the movie after four. I don't want to give away.
And it's a tricky line, because I've seen some films. I don't want to name names, but there's definitely other films that have tried to do the same, you know, the same genre switch or the same trick, and it just falls flat, or you're just like, oh, wait, So
my only issue with Barbarian is, so we had our premiere at a Fright Fest in London, and they did a sneak preview of Barbarian at the end of the movie when we were doing the Q&A. So some people were leaving, like, we're sorry, but we got to go see this.
Big Barbarian.
Screw that movie. But no, it is funny. At the time, I was a little, but it's more of a funny story to me now. So where can people go to see, like, where they could see Double Blind? That was a weird thing. Where can they see Double Blind?
No, yeah. So in America, so there's like, I don't have the theater list now, but there is like, it's in some select theaters from this Friday, the 9th of February. And then from the 13th of February, it'll be on like video on demand. And then, I don't know, I probably should have all the list here, but it's like wherever you get movies, I suppose, like that, it'll be there.
Yeah. It would be cool to get a chance for people to see it in the theater if they can.
Yeah, I would hope people could see it on as big a screen and as loud as possible. I think the sound design of the film, I think I'm in particular, I'm really proud of the work that our sound designer Brandon did and our composer D Hex. And I think it's really immersive and it really puts the audience in that sort of twitchy dream space that they're in, you know. And there's definitely some heavy John Carpenter synth work going on as well. If you don't get to see it in theater, but and you're watching at home, I suppose play it as loud as possible.
Yeah, you know? Turn the lights off and play it loud. And if you're watching on a laptop or computer, put your headphones on. If you're watching your big screen, just turn it up really loud.
Yeah, exactly.
And I mentioned earlier about Next. We don't want to get ahead of ourselves, but are you working on anything currently?
You know, I am, yeah. So myself and Derek, actually, we have development on our next feature. So we're just writing, we've done a draft of the first draft of the script, so we're just doing a second draft now. And it's another horror thriller, but on a bigger scale, hopefully. So similar to Double Blind, but hopefully give us more money this time. And make it
yeah. Well, I'm looking forward to seeing more from both of you.
Oh, thanks a million, man. Yeah. And hopefully you'll have me on again for the next one.
Yeah, unless you're too big by then.
No, absolutely. No.
I'd love to have you back when the next one comes out. And I really like Double Blind, not just because you're here. I really like the movie. So.
Oh, no, it's great. Listen, thanks so much for watching it and, talk to me about it today. I really appreciate it.
Yeah. And by the way, where can people follow you? Not, you know, back to your home, but if you like to follow you online or.
My website is like ianhuntduffy.com. If you go there, you'll have all my social stuff like Instagram and Twitter. You can follow me there if you want. I mean, at the minute, I'll just be I'll warn you, anything I'm posting now is pretty much go watch Double Blind. It might be a bit repetitive, but.